Contemporary Jewish Heritage, History and Prophecy in the Light of Truth, with your host, Dr. Eric Benson.
Well, we're going to be discussing an interesting concept here this morning, sort of a historical presentation. One of the things that you try to do whenever you get to know ministry opportunity that is presented to you is to learn as much about that opportunity as possible. If you're a missionary, let's say, and you are going to be traveling, whether it be to an inner city ministry in New York City, or whether it be to Argentina, or whether it be who knows where, what is the first thing that they do with a missionary or a missionary family or couple? They have them do what? They have them go out and learn about the culture that they're going to be ministering in the midst of. They're going to learn about the heritage of the people they're going to be reaching out to. They're going to learn as much as possible why. They want to learn as much as possible so that they can better understand and relate to and better be used in the presentation that they want to give. That's just typical. I have an associate that I've talked to on several occasions who is involved in an organization called Toronto Jewish Missions. He actually ministers in the heart of the Jewish community in Canada, in Toronto. And one of the key things that he is directly involved in, and we've talked about some of the things that we're going to be talking about here today, is he feels it's essential to understand these heritage and cultural issues. Elsewise, you have no connectivity, you have no understanding, you have no ability to make inroads with the truth of the gospel with these people. And that's with any culture, anywhere you go. It's the same thing as if you were living in Texas your entire life and you all of a sudden moved to Minnesota. You would have to relearn how you related to the people, how you did ministry. So today, we are actually going to be doing a history and heritage lesson. And we're going to strip away the layers, the titles, the banners, the groupings, and we're going to try to understand a little bit what's going on behind the scenes so that we can better relate in the future should we be presented with unique ministry opportunities. Are you with me so far? Awesome. All right. So what are some of the labels that we hear about today? Well, some of the labels that people use these days are, you'll hear the label, well, we might relate to the label born-again Christians. That's obviously a title people will use. Muslim community is a title. Other titles and groups that people use are based upon their geographic origin. You'll hear Asian Americans, right? Or you'll hear people who consider themselves to be Southerners versus Northerners. There's a third category. So we have this idea of belief categorization. We have this idea of geographic categorization. And the third category is based upon genetic heritage. And this is where you will have individuals actually say something like Afro-American. You know what I mean? African-American. And when they say that, they're not necessarily saying they have moved here from Africa individually. They're saying that their ancestry, their lineage, their genetic heritage is African, in that sense, Afro-American, African-American. Also, you might hear the concept of Semitic as being one that's thrown out. Now, where did the term Semitic come from? Well, the term Semitic comes from the idea of Noah's three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, Shemitic, descendant of Shem, hence Shemitic, Semitic. And so we would typically think, and you usually hear the term Semite or Semitic, usually used in connotation with anti-Semitic, right? Is that where we most often hear it? We most often hear the concept anti-Semitic. How do we hear that? Well, we hear that as somebody who is racially profiling or doing some sort of thing that would be against contemporary Judaism. That's how we would most often hear it. Well, what we're going to be discussing today is we're going to be actually looking at Jewish encyclopedias, Jewish authors, historians, anthropologists, and find out whether this term, this generic label, Semitic, is best applicable to the community. Because again, we want to understand the heritage and culture as much as possible. In fact, if you go back to September 10th, 1985, in an address to the Cornell Club of Washington, D.C., there was an author by the name of Alfred Lilienthal, and you might remember him. He was a Jewish author. And he suggested something rather interesting. He said this, "The overwhelming majority of Jews are descendants from the converts of Khazaria and elsewhere who adopted Judaism. This view of the non-ethnicity of the largest portion of Jewry is sustained by such prominent anthropologists as Ripley, Weissenberg, Hertz, Boas, Pittard, Fishberg, Mead, and others." Well, this is a radical concept, and this Jewish author is suggesting something unusual to us. He is saying that many of the people who practice Judaism today, whether it be in religious practice or whether it be the claiming it through their heritage, may in fact be descendants from these people called from a land called Khazaria. And so we need to analyze this a little bit more, again, to better understand. A professor of medieval Jewish history at Tel Aviv University presented similar conclusions. There was an article, this professor Pollock had devoted 40 out of his 64 years in trying to prove that 6 out of 10 Israelis and 9 out of 10 Jews in the Western Hemisphere are, as he would say, descendants of the fierce Khazar tribes which roamed the steppes of southern Russia many years ago. So, if we have Jewish authors talking about this kind of thing, we really ought to know, who are these Khazars? Who are these Khazars peoples? And why, you're probably going to ask me, why am I using so much Jewish reference material, Jewish encyclopedia, Jewish authors, and otherwise? Well, I like to go straight to the horse's mouth. You know, if I am going to want to know something about the Japanese culture, who better to understand it than to go talk to somebody or read the sources from Japanese authors? If I want to know something about people who are in, from a geographic origin of some sort, somebody who grew up their entire life and studied the state of Washington, well, am I going to read something written by somebody who's never actually been to the state of Washington, or am I going to read something by people who've lived there, studied it, understand it, or are immersed in it? And that's why we're using so much Jewish material, because we as believers need to understand this. So these Khazars, well, who are these Khazarians? Let's go to the Jewish Encyclopedia. And if we go to the Jewish Encyclopedia, we are going to find this information. It states the following, quote, "Khazars, a people of Turkish origin whose life and history are interwoven with the very beginning of the history of the Jews of Russia." And he goes on to, the encyclopedia goes on to describe how this conversion process took place. The conversion took place in 620, according to others, 740, but we get an idea of about what time period we're dealing with here. King Joseph, in his letters, and it's not the Joseph that we're thinking of in the Bible, it's this Khazarian king from around 700 AD. We have here, gives the following account of the conversion. "Some centuries ago, King Bulan reigned over the Khazars. To him, God appeared in a dream and promised him might and glory. Encouraged by this dream, Bulan went by the road of Darien to the country of Ardabil, where he gained great victories over the Arab people at that time. The Byzantine emperor and the caliph of the Ishmaelites sent to him envoys with presents and sages to convert him to their respective religions." So the Islamic community and the Christian community are sending envoys to this king, Bulan, and saying, all right, we want you to convert to our faith, Islam versus Christianity. So Bulan also invited the wise men of Israel, which would be the Jewish community at that time, and proceeded to examine them all. So he's got all three presented to him. At the end, each of the champions, he says, believed his religion to be the best. Bulan separately questioned the Mohammedans and the Christians as to which of the other two religions they considered the better. When both gave preference to that of the Jews, that king perceived that it must be the true religion. He therefore adopted it," end quote. So the idea here is that these Khazarians, the ruling class of the Khazarians, and started by the king, confronted all three religions that they were exposed to, They were not a participant in either of in any of the three religions. And he said, okay, which one do you think, if you couldn't be in your faith, which one would you choose? And he asked that to the Christians and the Mohammedans, the Muslims. And they both said, well, Judaism. And so he said, okay, well, that must be the right one. So these Khazarians converted the ruling class in mass to the faith of Judaism. And it says later on in the encyclopedia, quote, it appears as if all the Khazars were Jews and that they had been converted to Judaism only a short time before a book was written in the 9th century, it goes on to talk about. So the idea being that from this time period to about the 9th century, the Khazarian peoples converted in mass to Judaism. It was a convert situation. It'd be like as if you had an individual who practiced Buddhism and converted one day to Christianity. Now, does that mean he was born a Christian? Obviously not. No, he was what? He was converted. And nobody's really born a Christian, but you understand what I'm talking about, born into a family of people who practice that faith. No, he was born in a different faith. And these Khazarians were born and grew up in a different faith entirely and converted in mass to Judaism. The Jewish Encyclopedia includes a map which illustrates the Jewish position regarding their ancestry, and we're going to have that here. Both the map and an article suggests the genetic lineage is primarily from the Turkish-Mongolian Khazars. So if you look at this map, you'll see that it shows this region in southern Russia as being the region where these Khazars are from, and that's the concentration of Judaism, or the practice of Judaism, in that part of Europe and Asia. Now, since the Khazars adopted the religion of Judaism between the 7th and 9th centuries, the Khazarian claim of Jewishness would be strictly a religious, not a genetic nature. And we find that also in some of the other material that the Jewish Encyclopedia is. The New Standard Jewish Encyclopedia as well presents some information about that. The Khazars, a Turkish tribe which settled in the lower Volga region in the 8th century, a powerful Judaizing movement manifesting itself among the Khazars. Ultimately, their king Bulan and 4,000 of his nobles accepted Judaism, the prince Obadiah being active in securing their Judaization. In the book Anti-Semitism, Its History and Its Causes, Bernard Lazare summarizes the Khazarian conversion to Judaism. And now I just want to present to you a little segment from this book, Anti-Semitism, Its History and Causes. And this is was from 1903, and it was on pages 244 and 245. About 620, they, referring to the Jews, converted there a whole tribe, the Khazars, whose territory was in the neighborhood of Astrakhan. Legend seized upon this fact, which greatly stirred up the Jews of the West. But in spite of this, there can be no doubt about it. Isidore of Seville from Spain, a contemporary of the event, mentions it. And afterwards, it goes on to talk about other individuals who recognized that this process took place among the Jewish faith and Jewish community. So we have an interesting situation. These Khazars, had converted to Judaism in mass, and their descendants, according to what we're starting to read, many of their descendants are who are practicing Judaism today. Because if you go to the Jewish community, you will find that much of the Jewish community today claims their heritage being from the Russian community of Jews, or the Eastern European Jewry, which is the region that these Khazarian converts and conversion took place. Another name that the Khazars are known by, which you might be more familiar with, is the name Ashkenazim. How many have run across the name Ashkenazi Jews, Ashkenazi? We understand that there are two distinct groups of Judaism, the Sephardic and the Ashkenazi, Sephardic referring to the Sephard region of Spain. Ashkenazi, we may not have known where that name had come from. Jack Bernstein is an author, and he is also a Khazarian descendant, an Ashkenazi, and he gives us some information about these Ashkenazi, the Ashkenazi Jewish community. There are two distinct groups of Jews in the world, and they come from two different areas of the world. The Sephardic Jews from the Middle East and North Africa, and the Ashkenazi Jews come from Eastern Europe. The Sephardic is the oldest group, and it is they, if any, who are the Jews described in the Bible because they lived in an area described in the Bible. So he's saying that if any of them might have any relation to biblical genealogy, it would be the Sephardic Jews. They are blood relatives to the Arabs. The only difference between them is religion. This is what Jack Bernstein is saying. He goes on, the Ashkenazi Jews, who now comprise 90% of the Jews in the world. Now, this is interesting. I want to stop here for just a minute. The author is suggesting that 90% of Judaism in the world is a descendant from Ashkenazi or Eastern European Jewry, which means only 10% are from the Sephardic heritage. Bernstein goes on a little further. The Ashkenazi Jews, who now comprise 90% of the Jews in the world, have a rather strange beginning. According to historians, many of them Jewish, the Ashkenazi Jews came into existence about 1,200 years ago. And so we find out, of course, this link, the Ashkenazi. Under the heading Ashkenazi, Ashkenazism, in the New Standard Jewish Encyclopedia, and this would be from page 179, 1977 edition, it says this, quote, Ashkenazism constituted before 1933 some 9/10 of the Jewish people, end quote. In the book The American Jews, Jewish author James Jaffe, who is also a well-known and respected Jewish author, he wrote about the Ashkenazism or not Ashkenazi descendants in America. And this is what he says, quote, it has been estimated that 95% of the Jews in America today are descended from these East European, Khazar, right, immigrants, end quote. So this is kind of interesting here. 95% of the descendants are coming from these Eastern European or Khazarian immigrants. And that kind of gives us a radical concept. Now, you might say, well, maybe that's back before 1933 again. Well, no, this gentleman, James Jaffe, was writing in 1968. So we're dealing with even more contemporary history as we go along. Other things that Jaffe goes on to say, and this is kind of important as well. He says, quote, the early Sephardic settlers, for example, left practically no descendants who are still Jewish. They disappeared not because they intermarried, but because they refused to intermarry. Without sufficient choice among their own, they remained unmarried and died out, choosing extinction rather than assimilation, end quote. So what this author is saying as he studies the concept of contemporary Jewish heritage, he's saying that not only do 95% of contemporary Judaism trace their genetic lineage to the Khazarian or Eastern European Jewish community, but the Sephardic, whom we've learned earlier, are the group that might possibly have any link to biblical Israel, actually phased themselves out by refusing to marry or intermarry with the other Jewish community. In fact, to this day, the Sephardic and the Ashkenazi community are not always eye to eye for what little Sephardic actually still exists. Arriving at the conclusion that the Ashkenazi Jewish community may not necessarily be Semitic, and I'm going to explain that in just a minute. Dr. Lilienthal, who we talked about just a moment ago in the book What Price Israel, wrote this. And by the way, it's on page 222 of his book, What Price Israel, 1953 edition. Quote, these Ashkenazim, or Khazar, Jews, the Jews of Eastern Europe, whose numbers were swelled by Jews who fled from Germany at the time of the Crusades and during the Black Death, have little or no trace of Semitic blood. Now, why would these Jews not be Semitic? Because think about it. We were just talking a moment ago. Where did the term Semite come from? Where did the term Semite come from? One of the sons of Noah, right? Shem, Ham, Japheth. And we traditionally and typically believe that contemporary Judaism are the descendants of the Jewish or Judah Israel community of the Bible, right? That's the commonly held practice and belief in much of the church today. But the Jewish community, so while Christendom is saying, oh yeah, they're Semitic, the Jewish community is saying, no, we're not really Semitic. We're descendants of this other group. But they're not telling us yet who they are, and so we needed to dig a little deeper. In fact, I wanted to throw this one other thing out to you here. This is a rabbi, well-respected rabbi, in an Viewpoints, Thursday, November 8th, 1990, Rabbi Cyril Stanway, who wrote this, quote, "Though many Jews are not of Semitic origin, we are the religious, spiritual, and national descendants of those who first formed the early foundation of Judaism, who were Semites." So this is not just historians or authors that are, or even the Jewish encyclopedias that are suggesting this in the sense of a cultural basis. Here we find religious leaders within Judaism who are saying, oh, by the way, you know, we're not Semites, but we have embraced, or we are passing the torch of this culture and heritage along to other people. The Jewish Almanac in 1980, and I have a copy of the Jewish Almanac in my library. It's a hard book to get a hold of. It's an older book, 1980. If you open it up, you'll find that the first sentence of the first chapter reads this: "Strictly speaking, it is incorrect to call an ancient Israelite a Jew or to call a contemporary Jew an Israelite or a Hebrew." And so there's this understanding within Judaism that there's a disconnect, if you will, between contemporary Jewish community and the Semitic peoples that we read about in the Bible. So, if the Khazars are not of, according to their own admission, the contemporary Judaism or the Khazars, are not of Semitic genetic origin, where are they from? Where are they from? Historians and Bible scholars trace the lineage of the Khazarian peoples in mass as far back as the Table of Nations in Genesis 10. If you open your Bibles and you go to Genesis 10, you will find a list, a detailed list, of the descendants of Noah and the nations and groups of people that came from that. Now, in this chapter, we find Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now, Japheth being a son of Noah, Japheth had several sons, one of whom was named Gomer, not Pile, just so we can make sure we get that straight. And Gomer had a son whose name was, and this son was the grandson of Japheth, his name was Ashkenaz. Ashkenaz. Now we're starting to see something here. This grandson of Japheth, his name is Ashkenaz. Almost without exception, open your commentaries on the scriptures and history, and you will find that commentators agree that the descendants of Ashkenaz originally settled to the north of the Fertile Crescent. And if you look to the north of the Fertile Crescent, you'll find there the region of north of Palestine, north of Mesopotamia, that region up north there. And they point out that if you go to that area today, even place names, geographic place names, still carry that tradition forward. There's a Lake Ascanius, sounds a lot like Ashkenaz, right? Neighboring people in that region are still known as the Ashkenai. These people lived in the province of Phrygia and seem to be mentioned by Homer in the Iliad at one point as well. As the descendants of Ashkenaz moved northward, they found another group of descendants of Tiras, the Thyratians, as Josephus called them, already occupying a certain region, the plains of Thrace, and this probably contributed them to saying, okay, you guys are there, we don't want to mess with you, we're going to go a different direction. And they took a northerly route, which brought them into west-central Russia. In classical times, they dwelt near the center of the southern shore of the Caspian Sea. At that point, there's a chain of mountains which begins, and it runs eastward along the shore and beyond it. And that forms a natural geographic barrier and protection, which is opposed to the territory at that time that was controlled by the Sakai. So, and if you've not heard anything about the Sakai, or the Sakai, eventually Scythian and such, we can talk about that at another time. But this region that they're controlling on the opposite side of the mountains was referred to by the Emperor Julian's librarian and historian, Arminius Marcellinus, about 350 AD, as the Ascanimian Mountains. So we're still seeing, even by 350 AD, this continues, this Ashkenaz continuity continues in this part of west central Russia and southern part of Russia. So that is the same region occupied by the Khazars that we learned so much about in the 7th and 8th and 9th centuries. So you can see the continuity there. Hence the reason also that the Jewish Encyclopedia recounts the connection of Khazarian and Ashkenazi. And to this day, the majority of Judaism, practicing Judaism, descendants of the Khazars, also bears the name Ashkenazi. So, now, I said yes and no that they were Semitic a moment ago. And the reason for that is that there was some tribal moving around and national moving around that took place. And the Jewish Encyclopedia recounts a tradition by the Khazarian people that says that their, at least one part of their ancestry, originally lived in another region as well, in addition to being Japhethite. And before we go too far, I want to throw that out to you. If a great majority of the Ashkenazi community are Khazars, the descendants practicing Judaism today, probably hold their genetic lineage to Japheth rather than Shem, we may more technically, if someone is being prejudiced against them or racially profiling or otherwise against the Jewish community, we might be better off to use the term anti-Japhethite rather than anti-Semite. However, most people don't use that because they still make this connection, at least in the Christian community, between Shem and the descendants of Shem, the Israelites of, that we find in the scripture, and contemporary Judaism, the converts to Judaism, the Japhethites. So anti-Japhethite might be a better, but you'll confuse people if you use that term. Maybe more accurate, you're going to confuse them. So there's this tradition that's recounted in the Jewish Encyclopedia that says that the part of the Khazarian peoples also, and I'm going to read this to you, quote, speak of the tradition according to which the Khazars once dwelt near the Seir Mountains. The Seir, S-E-I-R, Mountains. Now, those of you who are students of the Bible or Bible historians, have you run across Mount Seir or the Seir Mountains before? Well, the Jewish Encyclopedia says that at least there's this tradition or belief among the Khazars that part of their genetic lineage may be from the Seir Mountains. Well, who dwelt near the Seir Mountains? Well, Genesis 32:3 says this, and Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, unto the land of Seir, the country of Edom. So Edom was a country that was in and around the region of Seir. In fact, Genesis 36, 1 through 8 goes into some great detail about this. And in fact, it talks about the generations of Esau, the descendants of Esau. And it says, now these are the generations of Esau, who is Edom. Thus dwelt Esau in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom. The Bible is very clear about this type of thing, that Esau had his descendants who became known as the Edomites. Eventually, Greek culture gave them the name Idumea. And you might be, in your reading your scriptures, you might run across the nation Idumea. Well, that's the Greek version of the land of Edom. And these descendants lived in and around the region of Mount Seir. So, there might be a touch of Semite in modern-day Khazarian, Ashkenazi, Jewish culture, but not through Jacob Israel, and eventually that lineage that we read about in the scriptures, right? And eventually what? The 12 tribes of Israel that we read so much about. 13, technically, by the way. And if you can know why, you'll get bonus points on trivia. But there is a biblical answer for that. And so that lineage, that descendants is going there. But of course, we know that Esau went a different direction. And his lineage was called the Edomites. So there's a touch of Semitic blood in contemporary Judaism, not from Israel, but from Esau, Edom. That's an interesting little piece of trivia. Now, there's a lot of discussion we can do about that, about culture and heritage and prophetic nature. We might touch on that if we have time here at the end. I don't know. This is not the first time. The Khazarians are not the first group of people that converted in mass to Judaism. The Bible records there was another time when this happened in Esther, the book of Esther. In fact, if you go to Esther 8:17, you will find that many among the peoples of the land of Babylon and that region around there, became Jews, for the dread of the Jews had fallen on them. Now, how is it possible to become a Jew out of fear of the Jews if you are the same person? Is it because you fear yourself, you're going to become yourself? That's impossible. I mean, that's just... So obviously, these people became proselyte. They became converted to the Jewish faith because they were afraid of what was taking place. And when we use the term Jewish faith, we're referring to the idea of the descendants of Judah, not necessarily contemporary Jewish beliefs. We're talking about biblical time periods. Sometimes we get confused and we forget about the hundreds of years, the thousands of years that have separated the time of Esther and the time today. So obviously, those non-Israelite peoples didn't alter their genealogy. They simply assumed the name Judites or Jews and came to be regarded as such. That's what happened to the Khazars, the Ashkenazis. According to three Jewish encyclopedias and the esteemed author Flavius Josephus, other Edomites as well became known as Jews in name or religion during the time of the Maccabean Wars and high priest John Hyrcanus. In the end of the 2nd century BC, the Edomites became a section of the Jewish people. They were incorporated with the Jewish nation. From then on, they constituted a part of the Jewish people. Now, who is a famous individual that we all know from Scripture who was actually a descendant of the Edomite converts of that time to Judean culture and life? Herod, correct. Herod was a descendant. So that's also, little Bible trivia there for you, that's also why Herod was so afraid that there might be born a king of the Jews for the prophecy, i.e. Christ, because he knew genetically his heritage had no claim to a kingship for the Israelite people. Hence his great fear of a genetic king arising and taking that away from him. He was from an Edomite or Idumean heritage. Dr. Benjamin Friedman, who is a well-respected Jewish scholar in his day, published a lecture that was given to the National Economic Council, and this was on October 15th, 1947. This was anybody know what was going on in 1947, 1948 that affected the Jewish community in a strong way? Obviously, the concept of repatriation back to the land of the Israelites, right, which is contemporary Israel today, the nation of Israel. This is what this Jewish scholar said. Vaguely, most Christian Americans have the idea that the Jews claimed Palestine because it was the promised land in which they lived for a period of a few centuries that ended 2,000 years ago. And the thought of a people returning to its homeland seems emotionally satisfying and good. I would agree with that. You know, it seems good to send people back to their homeland. I think that's important. You know, the connection with their heritage, if they need a place to go. Dr. Friedman goes on a little further. But here are the facts most Americans do not know. Political Zionism, now I probably should jump in right quick here. Political Zionism, is the political movement within Judaism that is strongly in favor of the creation of a Jewish homeland or Jewish state. Is almost exclusively a movement by the Jews of Europe. But these Eastern European Jews have neither a racial nor a historical connection with Palestine. Well, we just talked about that. Who told us about that? Well, the Jewish encyclopedias and Jewish authors just said that. Their ancestors were not inhabitants of the Promised Land. They are the direct descendants of a people of the Khazar kingdom, which existed until the 12th century. The Khazars, this is Dr. Friedman, the Khazars were a non-Semitic Mongolian tribe people who, about the 1st century AD, immigrated from Middle Asia to Eastern Europe. About the 7th century AD, the king of the Khazars adopted Judaism as the state religion. We've just talked about that. and the majority of inhabitants joined him in their new allegiance. Before that date, there was no such thing as a Khazar who was a Jew. Neither then nor since was there such a thing as a Khazar whose ancestors had come from the Holy Land. So there was no such thing as a Khazar whose ancestors had come from the Holy Land. And when he says that, he's referring to the idea of the Israelites, not necessarily the Idumeans, which the Khazars talk about. The Semitic people, who established Judaism in Palestine many centuries before the Khazars became converts to the Hebrew faith, did mostly immigrate from Palestine. But none of them, referring to the Semitic Israelites, emigrated to the Khazar kingdom far to the north. Well, that's kind of interesting. We have a group of people who practice Judaism today, who are descendants from Japhethite, or descendants from Esau, Edom, and not necessarily genetically, then, the descendants from Israel, who are asking to be sent back to a country that belonged to Israel because of a genetic heritage. It's probably not the most accurate place to be. If we were to establish a Jewish homeland or Jewish state, and it was based upon genetic lineage, according to these Jewish scholars and Jewish authors and encyclopedias and rabbis, probably West, Southern, Central Russia would be the best place to establish a contemporary Jewish state. Might also avoid a lot of problems with the Palestinians if we did that as well. It's if we were basing it strictly on genetics. According to the Jewish scholars, the best genetic homeland for contemporary Judaism would be Eastern Europe or Southern Russia. We read in the scriptures that we are to work well with the knowledge that we obtain. And many in Christendom believe wholeheartedly in that, that as much as we know about a group of people, the better we are able to minister in that environment. The better we are able to work according to the Lord's will and His word. And many in Christendom are of the opinion that today's contemporary Jewish population descends from the Judites or the Israelites of biblical times. So Christianity believes this. But Jewish authors, Jewish encyclopedias, Jewish scholars, Jewish rabbis, in their own writings and words, consistently state otherwise. If you were going to choose who's right, again, I like to go straight to the horse's mouth. You know, I would tend to believe that probably the Jewish community best understands the heritage of the Jewish community. Consequently, either by conversion in the 7th and 2nd century BCs, that'd be the Esther centuries or the John Hyrcanus Maccabean Wars with Idumea, or the conversions that took place with Khazaria in the 7th through 9th century AD, most of today's Jewish community are descendants of converts to Judaism and not genetic Israelites. Now, does this information change the fundamental truths of the gospel? No. Does this information change, perhaps, how we best minister truth, how we best understand the group of community, the Jewish community that we might relate to? Sure, it helps us better understand them. In fact, I've been on trains before traveling, because I don't fly, and I've run into Jewish individuals, and we've been able to strike up conversations, and I'll ask them questions, well, are you Sephardic or Ashkenazi? And they look at me like, how do you even know to ask that question? It basically because the Christian community at large doesn't research this material. And when they understand that I know a little bit about their heritage, we're able to connect and have a conversation that might have never been able to take place. And it's rather exciting to have that dialogue that way. Now, there are some other side effects, though, that the Christian community has to understand. That is, if genetically contemporary Judaism is not Israelite, but Japhethite or Edomite, let's say, that changes the way we treat the eschatological issues that we face in contemporary society. Would the recreation of the state of Israel be the regathering of Israelites if genetically none of them are Israelite? It's an interesting question to consider. Politically, does it behoove us to support the Israeli community in Palestine for the creation of a homeland, genetic homeland, if we might be better suited to support the creation of a Jewish homeland genetically in another area that's more appropriate for their heritage and avoid the conflicts that are taking place there in the Middle East? We might have been able to avoid much of the conflict in the Middle East had we supported the Jewish community with a more accurate genetic homeland rather than the one that's being attributed to them that isn't from their ancestors. You follow what I'm saying here? So we're changing the political considerations. We're changing eschatological considerations. We might also be changing financial considerations, because I know a lot of individuals in the Christian community like to give money to send individuals from Russia, Jewish individuals from Russia, to the modern Israeli state to repatriate or to their new homeland. We might actually be unknowingly sending genetic individuals from their homeland to a land that isn't genetically their homeland. So is it necessary for us to be involved in that process? There's a lot of issues that we need to understand. And so you understand that by understanding what Judaism itself says about their heritage really impacts how we interact and minister in that community. This is exciting stuff. This is an opportunity for us to be better prepared. You know, we perish for lack of knowledge at times, right? Well, maybe our efforts to minister and be involved in politics and finance perishes because we are not as well knowledgeable about the heritage of contemporary Judaism as contemporary Judaism is. So again, just to sum up, this understanding of the Khazarians, the Ashkenazi connection, the heritage of Mount Seir, maybe anti-Semitic isn't necessarily the right term. And maybe we might be better prepared with this information to serve our God in truth and love and to share the great news of our Lord and Savior in an expedient and practical way. Thank you very much.